You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome to tonight's live broadcast, everybody, of TPC. I'm your host, James Edwards, this Saturday evening, October 13th. We've got another action-packed show coming your way tonight, so buckle up and hold on tight. I'll tell you who we only have for one segment tonight, though, and that is Keith Alexander the Great. Keith is out of town tonight, and he did want to call in, though, to, well, have his say this evening, although an abbreviated one. And I know we've been talking about it for the last month, and we're only going to talk about it for one segment tonight, but it is the final wrap-up, the definitive final word on the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, our post-confirmation reflections. Keith, go.
Well, you know, we may have wondered why the left had given so much of its ammo trying to stop the Kavanaugh nomination. They obviously had hurt themselves for the upcoming November midterm elections. But the November midterm elections pale in comparison to what they've lost with Kavanaugh's confirmation to the U.S. Supreme Court. It's the end of a 65-year reign of terror by the left, visited upon America through the Supreme Court and the power of judicial review. Earl Warren was confirmed. First of all, Fred Vinson died on September the 8th, 1953. By September the 20th, on September the 20th, they confirmed Earl Warren to take his place as Chief Justice. It was based on a secret deal made by Dwight Eisenhower in return for Warren maneuvering so that the 45 electoral votes of the state of California went to him in the Republican primary so that he could become the nominee of the Republican Party for president in 1954. His reward for doing that was to be elevated to the next opening on the U.S. Supreme Court. That's what happened. And since that time until now, we've had a Supreme Court that was predominantly liberal and affected liberal change in America. Now that may have come to an end because we have a third party organization, Federalist Society, that put together this list that Trump is drawing from, and these people, although they're not, you know, necessarily what the doctor ordered for America, they are at least constitutional originalists. Now, all that means is that we probably won't, for the short term, see more liberal innovations like gay marriage, for example, being forced upon us by the Supreme Court. But I think that reversing things like Roe versus Wade or Brown versus Board is probably not going to be in the offing. So that leaves us wherever we are. But on the other hand, you know, the big question is, if Trump wins in 2020, who's going to step up to replace him that would be anywhere near as, you know, good for us as him? And again, that's understanding that Trump is not the answer to everybody's prayer. It's not going to turn the clock back to 54, for example.
Well, I'll tell you, Keith, I can think of somebody who would be better than Trump, and that's Representative Steve King out of Iowa. That would be somebody that would be Trump and then some. But, yeah, you know, you and I were talking about this at lunch earlier this week. I think it is a good thing that Kavanaugh was confirmed as opposed to the Democrats getting their person in. But obviously, the left has already inflicted so much damage through the Supreme Court. All they have to do, and we've talked about this, all they have to do with the continuing ongoing demographic onslaught that we're being subjected to, all they have to do is take the ball, sit on it, and run out the clock. Unless the Trump court actually reverses some of these unconstitutional and anti-white rulings, which they're not going to do. They're not going to have the balls to do to the left what the left did to us. The left was ruthless. Our people still have this sense of fair play. That includes Kavanaugh. As much as he's gone through, they are not going to go back and retroactively remove and repeal some of these decisions, and they're not going to stick it to them as the left stuck for the last 60 years.
Nice guys finished last, right? And it's but you're right. But one good thing is that the one thing that has to be stopped is third world immigration, because that makes everything irreversible. And one thing hopeful that I've heard about Kavanaugh is that he is an immigration hawk. He's somebody that basically that, in fact, that's one of the
reasons. They better get on it.
Yeah, let's just hope that he is. And if we can stop that, then maybe we can go about in a more orderly fashion trying to reverse some of the other damage done by the liberal Supreme Court, starting with the Warren Court. But, you know, again, I'm not predicting that that's going to happen, but I'm saying at least that this is a small victory in the fight, and it does end the reign of terror that we've had.
No. It's a good thing. It is a good thing. It's a good thing. I think, though, they have done so much damage. What is stalling it now going to do for us? Well, it's still better than accelerating it, I guess you could say. I mean, a person who's dying hangs on to every last day they can get. I think as our dying nation, we can relate to that. As our nation dies, we can relate to that. We want to extend it. As long as you can extend it, you have a chance to turn it around. Once you're dead, you're gone. And so it's a good thing that he's in there. I just don't see them being as aggressive as the left was when they were in control of the Supreme Court.
Let me put it this way. The best thing he could do is, one, stop further third world immigration, and two, pump out all the illegal third worlders that are here now. If he can do that, then he will have done
an
awful lot.
That is absolutely true, Keith. There's no doubt about it. But we need to get some of these cases before this court, and I mean lickety split, as in yesterday. Let's get some big immigration cases. Let's get a precedent set here real quick.
We need to create a conservative equivalent of the National Lawyers Guild and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. And that would be the first thing we need to do. And then we need to start becoming judicial activists the way that the left did. That was their secret weapon over the past 65 years.
Well, that's right. And as we further reflected on this whole thing, we may have talked about this in a previous week on the show. We have covered this a lot in the last month, and this is going to be the final word on it. But I found myself wondering, why do I care about this establishment conservative who's never really done anything for white people? Why do I care? And I came to the conclusion that Kavanaugh is a symbol. I mean, he may be a weak symbol, but he is. I do give him credit for not folding, though. He showed a lot of guts in standing up to that attack, that relentless, incessant attack, and not buckling. I will give him credit for that. That was inspirational. But to me, it was all an attack on him as a white Christian male. He may be a limp-wristed conservative. Maybe he has been hardened by this. I hope he has been. But at the end of the day, he is a symbol of what we are, for better or for worse. He is a white male, and it was because he was a white male and a heterosexual and a Christian that he was, I believe, so savaged.
And you know that Trump put his full efforts behind Kavanaugh, but did not, notably, about Roy Moore. Then, on the other hand, Roy Moore denounced us before. So, you know, where does that
put? I think people forgot that. But even though Roy Moore did denounce yours truly some years ago, I was still all in for him last year. There's no doubt about that. If I had to wait for somebody who didn't denounce me, I wouldn't have many friends. But, hey, thank you, Keith. Enjoy the rest of your night. I appreciate you calling in and giving us a segment this evening, taking away from your function. Keith is greasing on that social lubricant tonight. He is glad-handing. We'll talk to you next week, brother. For the rest of you, stay tuned. We're just getting started.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
I really don't want to talk about this, but I will. I'm just so mad. I didn't get asked to the junior prom, and it's raining, which means by the time I get to school, I'm soaking wet. Dad picked me up just after I left, and I was so mad I got out, and he said, wait, your mom said to give you this. I forgot my lunch money, and then I dropped it in the water, and I was late for history, and so at lunchtime, I had to find something on John Stuart Mill, which, of course, our library didn't have, so I had to walk all the way down to the office to call my mom, and she found something on the internet and called me back. And Karen, she wouldn't even help me, and that's a whole nother story. But Dad helped me conjugate nouns or whatever on the way to the swim team workout, and then he read my history paper while I was in the pool, and of course, I forgot the bibliography, so I had to do that with my mother when I got home, and it made me totally forget that I put my jeans in the washer that morning, and I hate it when they sit wet like that all day and smell like mildew, but my mom said she put them in the dryer while I was at the swim team, and you know, I'm just not gonna go to the prom, no matter who asks me. I just wanna stay home with my mom and dad.
Family.
And just hang out.
Isn't it about time?
Unless Dustin asks me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
I gotta brag on you once again, ladies and gentlemen. We do have the most loyal, the most intelligent, and the most attractive, let's not forget, audience in all of talk radio. And we have a young lady in Missouri who sent me this message about the first Me Too event, the false accusation of rape that occurred in the biblical accounting of Genesis, in the book of Genesis, with Joseph and Potiphar's wife. So this is a tale as old as time, and this was thousands of years ago. So Potiphar is a person known only in the book of Genesis's account of Joseph. And Joseph, if you remember the story in the Bible, was sold into slavery by his brothers, and he was taken to Egypt, where he was sold to Potiphar as a household slave. And Potiphar makes Joseph the head of the household, but Potiphar's wife, who is not named in the Bible, is furious at Joseph for resisting her attempts to seduce him and falsely accuses him of attempted rape. Potiphar casts Joseph into prison, from where he later comes to the notice of Pharaoh through his ability to interpret the dreams of other prisoners. So that is in the book of Genesis, Genesis 39 and 40, and that may very well be the very first false accusation of rape, but it just goes to show how long this game has been played. I thought that was interesting. I thought that was very interesting, so thank you, Kim, for sending that to us. Kim also shared with me a very interesting story about actual rape. She was traveling to the West Coast earlier this year, she writes, and she was sitting next to a lady on the airplane whose mother was in Germany post-World War II. And she said years later her mother told her that she was raped by an American GI there. So assuming that's true, and I do assume that's true because I saw what the Union Army did to my ancestors in the South. So we will assume that's true. So those real stories of rape are diminished by all of this exaggerated Me Too nonsense where a guy comes up and asks a girl for a date and he's accused of attempted rape. We talked about that with Roger Devlin. Yeah, having someone hit on you at a party is not the same as being someone's spoil of war. And so we need to keep that into perspective in perspective as we go forward. And I know that you will here on TPC. So thank you, Kim, for all of that. Now, there is a story that I've been wanting to cover. Well, scratch that. I haven't been wanting to cover it. I felt as though I should cover it. But we have been so busy this year, especially in recent weeks with guests, with breaking news, with everything that we do here on a weekly basis, that I haven't gotten to this yet. I've actually been mulling over discussing this particular story for about a month, maybe a little longer than that, and I have just never done it. But I'm going to do it tonight because we do have a little time with Keith being out this evening, and it freed up a little time in the first hour, so this is a perfect time to work this story in. So I have never addressed the issue of Derek Black, and you will perhaps know Derek Black as being the son of Don Black, who is a good friend of mine. He and his wife Chloe are fantastic people. We love them dearly. They're friends of my wife and I. Every time we see them, it's a kiss on the cheek. It's old friends. I've known Don for a long, long time, and Derek is his son. And of course, Derek defected from what we would call the pro-white movement some years ago, and I've never talked about that. And I'm not going to talk about it now. I know some of the things that behind the scenes. I know some of the chain of events that led to that. We have never bartered in gossip on the political cesspool, and we never will. We don't air laundry here, dirty or clean. And we're not going to start tonight. But the only reason I'm mentioning the name of Derek Black is because there is a new book out. A new book, Rising Out of Hatred. That was written. Let me find the author of this piece, of this book. Now, Derek and the author of this book have been going all over the country. They've been on the Today Show. They've been on with Megyn Kelly. They have been written about extensively in, essentially, for all intents and purposes, every single newspaper and magazine of any renown, all the talk shows. And that's because this book just came out a few weeks ago. And the name of the book is, I just now pulled it up, Rising Out of Hatred, The Awakening of a Former White Nationalist. And it's written by a guy named Eli Saslow. And it says underneath his name, winner of the Pulitzer Prize. So you know he must be a grade A piece of you know what to win that. Eli Saslow, Rising Out of Hatred, The Awakening of a Former White Nationalist. And the whole book is about Derek's defection from common sense, I guess, is the most honest way to put it. So again, why are we talking about it tonight? Well, I've known Derek for a long time. I haven't obviously talked to Derek in some years now. But Derek actually said it was the political cesspool. It was yours truly who encouraged him to go into radio. And for a while, Don and Derek Black had the Don and Derek Black show on AM radio down in West Palm Beach, Florida. And Derek always said it was because of the inspiration that we set in him that he decided to start his own radio show. And they did that for a couple of years. Now, Don is obviously Derek's no longer part of it. And Don, I don't think, still has the AM affiliate. But Don Black has his own show now on the Rents Radio Network. But I would see Derek all the time at these conferences, and I remember taking him and Don to Sun Studios and to Nathan Bedford Forrest Grave when they were in Memphis. Well, we saw each other many times. But anyway, so I was interested because I know the family so well. When this book came out, and, you know, my interest was just piqued enough to where I thought I would go take a look, and so I went to the local Barnes & Noble. I opened up the book. I was thinking about buying it. I was just going to buy it just to, you know, I was going to read it. I can read things that I don't agree with. I can read things that are untrue. I have a brain that works. I was thinking about getting it. I read the first page of it. I laughed. I put it down, and I walked out. Rising Out of Hatred by Eli Saslow. So Eli's writing the story of Derek Black. In the very first page of the book, forget it, the very first paragraph of the book, there were so many lies, I couldn't believe it. Now, how do I know that they're lies? the very first page of the book, talking about Derek's awakening from common sense, is the story of the conference that was held in Memphis in 2008. This is how the book begins. This is the conference that I planned. This was my conference, a joint conference with David Duke. I mean, it was David's conference, I guess you could say. This was the Euro conference in 2008. But it was held jointly with me and here in Memphis, and I was the guy on the ground. So I did the legwork for this particular event, and David and I sort of co-headlined it. And so I was interested, certainly, when I opened the first page, and it's talking about this event in Memphis in 2008 that I had such a hand in. And then I read the first paragraph. Put the book down, walked out, didn't buy it, didn't think twice about it, but I did want to bring it to you. The only reason I thought twice about it was to bring it to your attention tonight and set straight the record. Oh, I'm going to read it. I don't want to read it, but I'm going to read it to you right now. This is how the book begins. The Klansmen and Neo-Nazis. Let me read the whole thing, and then I'll go line by line and correct it. The Klansmen and neo-Nazis arrived for their meeting in the fall of 2008, dressed in suits with aliases written on their name tags, and began sneaking into the hotel just after dawn. I'll let you stop right there. You may need to get a pail, a bucket, be close to a sink. It gets more nauseating than that, much more nauseating. And I'm not just talking about in the way that we're described, which is patently false. I'm talking about they play fast and loose with the facts, the absolute facts. I'll tell you about it when we come back, then we're going to move on.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. come back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, I'm going to wrap this up pretty quickly because I don't want to talk about this any more than I have to. We've never talked about Derek Black on this show after he went to the dark side because we didn't want to disrespect the family. And the only reason I'm bringing it up tonight is to set straight the lies in this book that's supposed to be, I guess, a quasi-autobiography. I actually am going to take it sentence by sentence and correct it sentence. Otherwise, we're just going to get lost in all of the dishonesty here. The Klansmen and neo-Nazis, this is the opening page of the book. The Klansmen and neo-Nazis arrived for their meeting in the fall of 2008, dressed in suits with aliases written on their name tags, and began sneaking into the hotel just after dawn. Okay, number one, you can call us a Klansmen or neo-Nazis. That doesn't make it so. There's not one person there that if you went up to them and said, how would you identify yourself? They would have said a Klansman or a neo-Nazi, not one. So there's that. Let's just dismiss that. Dressed in suits with aliases written on their name tags. Out of the 300 people that were there, there might have been a handful that had aliases. Certainly not the majority. So that's a lie. Began sneaking into the hotel. No, we didn't sneak into it. We rented the room. We were supposed to be there. And so we didn't sneak in. We walked through the front door and we went to our seats. Now, this is when it gets really egregious. They walked past the protesters waving rainbow flags on the sidewalk, past the extra state troopers stationed outside the hotel lobby, and past the FBI informants hoping to infiltrate their way inside. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. That is a lie from the pit of hell. Nobody knew where the hotel was. Our own people didn't know until the morning of. Therefore, there were no protesters. Not only were there no protesters that morning, there were no protesters throughout the entire weekend. I actually called another guy who was there with me, and I read this, and we both laughed. He said, that didn't happen. I said, I know it didn't happen. He said, there was no protesters there. That's utter BS. So there were no protesters there, certainly not in Memphis, Tennessee, in the South, in 2008, waving rainbow flags. That whole nonsense didn't even start until about 2012, and even then only on the far coasts. A total lie. Total lie. They completely made that up. We didn't walk past protesters. There were no police officers there, no law enforcement. If there were FBI informants there, we sure didn't know anything about it, and I doubt that they were there at all. So no cops, no rainbow flag waving protesters. That did not happen. Total fiction. Absolutely never happened. I was there. Eyewitness account. Polygraph me. Swear on my life, that never happened. For several days, the government of Greater Memphis, the lies continue, had been working to prevent this white rights conference from taking place. One suburb declared a state of emergency so it could hire additional police officers. Another issued a temporary ban on all public gatherings. Once again, we have lies here. One suburb declared a state of emergency so they could cancel the conference, but it had nothing to do with hiring additional police officers. And there was a ban on all public gatherings, that's true, but the suburb was one and the same. I mean, this guy, we're in the third sentence here, and we have one thing that was completely made up, and we have one instance here where it was the same suburb, the same county. They issued the state of emergency, not to hire additional police officers, but to ban all public gatherings, to ban all events. That's true, but he's saying one suburb did this, one did that. No, it was just one, not two. Who is this guy? They're giving Pulitzers to guys like this. They can't get basic facts straight, and then they totally fabricate things that even if Derek told him that happened, he has to check in on that and make sure that it's true, right, before he writes it. I mean, this is a Pulitzer Prize-winning liar here. Incredible. But by 7 a.m. on Saturday morning, about 150 of the world's preeminent white nationalists had gathered inside a hotel conference room where a small sign hung on the wall. The fight to restore white America begins now, it read. Two things about that sentence. Number one, there was 300 of us, not 150. It was 300 of us, and that was half the people who were scheduled to attend. The other half didn't come after the first hotel canceled us. But 300 of the 600 who were registered still came. But it was 300, not 150. And by the way, there was no sign hanging on the door that said the fight to restore white America begins now. I never saw that sign. I planned this conference. I managed it like a hawk. I never saw that sign. Never saw that sign. So I'm going to just count here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sentences. 5 sentences. There is a lie in every sentence and 3 in one. And that is just the first paragraph of the book. And this is a long book. Ladies and gentlemen, that is what, you know what? I am tired of liars. This reminds me of the stories about these hurricanes. Hurricane Michael, the one that they said wasn't a big deal, that's the one that destroyed everything. But all these other hurricanes, I can remember people telling me, I have a friend who lives on in a hurricane-prone area, and he said that he was weathering a hurricane at his home, and the news came on, and they were a few blocks away in the town square, and he said they were getting pelted with hail, and the wind was blowing so hard they could barely stand. And he looked out his window and he says, my goodness, this is just a, you know, within walking distance. And it's nothing like this. It's a storm to be sure, but it's nothing like this outside my house. So he actually put on his slicker, walked down to where this TV crew was broadcasting live. And he said, so help me God, James. He said, I saw them with industrial fans and ice chippers, pelting them with ice to make the broadcast look more sensational. And this is them reporting the weather. And he said, I knew at that point if they would lie about the weather, they could and would and do lie about everything. And so we see it here now in this book, this monstrosity. 5 paragraphs. So many lies, so many basic facts just fabricated. Rainbow flag waving protesters. Anybody that was there will tell you that never happened. Totally made up. Anyway, that was a great event in my life. I loved that event. We overcame a lot of obstacles to have an absolutely euphoric conference, and it was fantastic to be there with the speakers. It was fantastic to be there with the people who were there. I can remember there was a Cracker Barrel near that hotel, and we ate every meal at the – I think we ate at Cracker Barrel about 15 times that week. That was basically our command center. David Duke got thrown out of 3 hotels, and I'm not talking about because he was trying to hold an event there. I'm talking about because he was David Duke, and he was trying to sleep there for the night. They wouldn't even let him rent a room for his own personal accommodations. And you tell me we have freedom in this country? That was 10 years ago now. And I was in the room with him when the manager came. He said, I'm not having an event here. I'm not doing any press here. I'm just here to sleep. You know, I'm not breaking any. He said, we can't have you here. But it was fantastic to – and we did 3 hotels like that. David got kicked out of 3 hotels. I was there with him the whole time. But it was a fantastic event with wonderful people, some of the best people in the country. And I'm proud to have been there, and I'm proud to have a hand in being the lead organizer of that. And so, yeah, when I see a book like this, I am going to come on this show, and I'm going to set the record straight. Now, am I reaching as many people as this book is reaching? Probably not. They're getting – I mean, the entire – support group of the regime, the entire media has their mouthpiece in, and they're all promoting this book and all of the lies contained therein. And that's fine. They can do that. But I can do it here for the people who matter to me and for the people who care about the truth. I am so tired of liars, though. I grow so tired of liars. It's like you never know what's true anymore. It's like the story I heard this week I don't know if you know this or not, ladies and gentlemen, but the Nazis actually had dragons at the death camps to cremate the bodies. I don't know if you know that or not. They flew away when the Russians broke the lines, and that's why nobody ever saw them. But hard to believe, but it's true. Well, anyway, that's what I'm talking about. So we set the record straight here, ladies and gentlemen, on TPC every week. And with this story that it did... only something personal like this that I had, that I played a significant role in, would cause me to mention the name of Derek Black, because, again, his father's a good man and a good friend of mine. But this isn't so much about Derek, but rather this book and the author who wrote it, truly. And anyway, thank you for listening to me, and thank you for... letting me set the record straight. And now that that's done, we don't have to revisit that. Unless you read the book. If you read the book, it didn't have an index, so I didn't see how many times I was mentioned in it. I did go. I did read the first paragraph, and I went back to the index, but it wasn't indexed. So you'll have to help me out if you actually read it. They are making a movie out of the book, by the way. Wouldn't you know? When a Pulitzer Prize winner writes a book about a guy escaping common sense, there's going to be a movie made into it, and they are actually working on a movie about this. So if you don't read the book, maybe you can catch the movie. I said if they get a guy to play me in the movie, I will play James Edwards. I can do that. But if not, I want Jason Statham. Look up Jason Statham. That is my doppelganger if there ever was one. Two handsome guys if there ever were two. And so I want it to go on record right now. When the movie comes out, I want Jason Statham to play my part. We already know David Duke's got his guy. Topher Grace plays Duke in the movie. So we'll be back right after this.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution. The Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm a prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tified, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, just one last thing about bringing shame on one's father's name. It's like the commandment, honor thy father and thy mother. Like the 10th commandment prohibiting envy and covetousness, that's been largely forgotten as Christians obsess now over the fake sin of racism, whatever that means, or whatever that is. Modern Americans want to show how great they are by putting their parents and ancestors down. This way they don't have to have any gratitude for what their parents and previous generations gave them. And it's an easy source of both what I like to call easy virtue. It's so easy to be virtuous by taking moral stands on issues like the slave trade and of the false little glow that people get by feeling good about themselves. But I really hate when people put their family down and dishonor their family name. In the Apocrypha, there is a passage that reads, "Do not deny kindness to the dead." And we should remember our ancestors, and we should revere them, and we should revere our fathers, and we shouldn't betray them. Anyway, so that's my last thing on this. I got to tell you, folks, I'm really excited about this. We only this is just going to a couple of minutes. We have a very surprise call now from the one and only, the man who so famously challenged Paul Ryan in 2016. Paul Nalen is on the line right now. Paul, how are you?
James, I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's entirely our pleasure, and of course, we watched as so many people across the country did in 2016 when you amazed and you astounded us, and I told you this week that it was just our glaring omission that we had not started to collaborate prior to now. But in case any of you are wondering, ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like to quickly read from Paul's website. When you start out on the factory floor at 18 years old and end up running factories all over America and the rest of the world, isn't that what some would call the American dream? Well, it was Paul's. He is a Wisconsin business executive with over 30 years of experience in the manufacturing industry. He got his start on the shop floor when he was 18, worked his way up through middle management and into executive positions. He has now run business operations for Fortune 500 companies throughout America, Europe, and Asia. As an inventor, Paul holds 7 patents in the United States, more abroad, and has others pending. So let me tell you something, my friend. For a guy like you to come out and be so honest and so bold really inspired us, and I am glad now that we can correct the error of not speaking with you sooner on this show.
No, I'm really glad to be on. As I told you, I heard you on a podcast the other day with Jean-Francois Garrett, and I was so impressed with that interview. You know, it made sense for us to have a conversation, and you know, we've got a mutual friend in Dr. Duke, and I think we actually have a bunch of mutual friends. It is ironic that we didn't end up hooking up earlier, but I'm really glad that we have. And you know, I think you're doing God's work. I like to think that I'm doing God's work, and we're working in the same direction, I believe. You know, all of us have come to this. To this place, to this fight, to this battle in different ways. You know, I came through industry and being a mechanical engineer and business guy, watching my country be torn down and sold off by these globalists. And so, you know, however we end up at the fight, as long as we're in it, and it to win it, then I think we ought to work on working together. So I'm quite honored to be on your show and looking forward to being on again next week.
That's right. And again, I would just like to say that's high praise coming from you, because unfortunately, movements that are not part of the current mainstream, and I always maintain that all of this opposite, well, you heard it on the podcast, I guess, when I was on the public space. I think a lot of this opposition we face is a mile wide and an inch deep. And when power shifts back to our side, I think everybody will have always been a true believer if you ask them. But I don't think today is as dark as people think it is, and I think it can change, and it's changed in other parts of the world. But as we stand right now, it is a marginalized movement, and marginalized movements typically, or in some cases, attract folks from the fringe. They attract people with nothing to lose. So what is very impressive is when a man who has been so accomplished in business and who does have something to lose, it comes out and is so honest and is so public with his honesty. And certainly we've done that, but you did that as well. And we are fellow travelers because of that. And I look forward, people now are being let in on this little secret. Paul will be with us next week for a full hour. We wanted to have Paul on tonight. And so he is on for just a moment, but Paul's going to be back with us for an hour next week. And we're going to talk about his life, his biography, his campaigns. We're going to get into current issues, current events, and visions for the future. It's going to be a real in-depth interview with the one and only Paul Nehlen next week on TPC. We'll have him for a full hour tonight. Just a little teaser, I guess you could say. Paul, can we let can we tell folks, or is this inside information? Can we tell folks what you're doing tonight?
No, that's fine. Yeah, I'm at a Halloween party, and I'm dressed as Trump, and my wife's dressed as Melania, and we've got a bunch of people. I moved off into another room. There's music and eating and friends very excited to spend 5 minutes with you tonight in advance of next week's interview. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for stepping away from your party and your engagement this evening to say hello to the audience and to give them a little preview of what's coming next week. We'll let you get back to the festivities. Godspeed, and we'll talk to you a week from tonight.
Yeah, God bless you and your listeners. Take care. Have a great night.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Paul Nehlen, everybody. Hey, I don't think that's a guy that needs any introduction, but again, what he did running against Paul Ryan, most impressive. And we will learn more about Paul together next week. I look forward to that. But he had reached out to me, as he just mentioned. He had heard me on this interview that I did. I've had a very busy week, busier than usual week, I guess you could say. I was on quite a few interviews this week. And one of them was the one that he just mentioned, the public space. And Paul had emailed me with quite a nice email, and we had exchanged a few emails, and I said, hey, let's get you on this week. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about all of these things. And he said he'd love to, but he's at a Halloween party. And I said, okay, no problem. Let's do the following week, which we will. But he said, hey, you know, we can do 5 minutes just to tease it. And so now that has been done. But hey, if you missed that interview, I think it was Wednesday. Every day's a happy day with TPC. But I was on the Public Space podcast, and within the first 24 hours, it had been viewed over 10,000 times on YouTube, and that's not counting the people who watched it live. But we had a wide-ranging discussion. The host and I did, JF and I did. It was kicked off in celebration over the news of Nikki Haley's resignation. We started off with that, and then a fast-paced hour ensued, during which we talked about the history of my work here on the Political Cesspool. And I don't know if I've ever done an interview on YouTube that received such a positive response. I'm not talking about just from his audience, but from regular listeners of TPC who caught it. Don't I do that good every night? It seemed as though y'all were surprised that it went that well. But no, in all seriousness, it was a fun interview. It was a great interview. Had a big audience, and I'm so glad that so many people seem to like what I had to say. But he did a good job hosting it as well. It's always fun when the tables are turned. When you're a host, it's fun to have the tables turned, and we have that opportunity a lot. I don't take advantage of it as much as maybe I should. But when it's a guy like that that I'm familiar with his work, even though I hadn't talked to him before. That was one that I wanted to do, and it generated a very positive response, and I think it should definitely be watched by the loyal listeners of TPC. So if you've not yet seen it, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, October 10th, and go to the October 10th blog entry, and you can watch that interview. The computer here at the studio is going slow. Well, I could pull it up, I guess, but I'd have to type and talk at the same time. That's sort of like walking and chewing gum at the same time. Some people can do it. Some people can't. I'm just curious as to how many views this has now. I'm still here, ladies and gentlemen. Don't worry about it. Now, but I'm here, but my computer isn't, apparently. Anyway, over 10,000 views the first 24 hours. You can go check it out. But I got to tell you something else. Something else happened this week. It's actually one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life. That's no exaggeration. Matthew Drake, who we've had on this show, he actually interviewed me on his podcast also earlier this summer when we were in our quarrel with the Southern Baptist Convention. But he's also a very talented artist, and he took an audio clip. He took an audio clip of my recent interview with Roger Devlin, the one that Keith Alexander and I did just, what, 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago? About the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. This guy illustrated it as the conversation was unfolding. So let me just say again, Matthew Drake, he put it on YouTube. He took a 7-minute audio clip from the political cesspool and he illustrated it while we were talking. If I could draw like that, ladies and gentlemen, the world would be my oyster. This is the first time a segment of TPC has been immortalized in a work of art. Watch this video and be amazed. I'm telling you, be amazed. So you go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, once again, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and you can find that on this week's blog roll as well. And that particular entry is entitled False Accusations, False Rape Accusations, and the Presumption of Guilt. This young man illustrated a 7-minute clip of TPC while we were talking. Everything we said, he drew it. I've never seen anything like this in my life. What a fantastic week it's been. We'll be back right after this.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.